Over some of the methodology and some of the reasonings why I chose certain certain locations, and then we'll go ahead and show the film. I have nothing to disclose. Again, here's some of the outline, the background of the study, methodology. We'll show the documentary and review some of the results and discussions and also some future implications. In 2008, India had about 1.15 billion people, which covered about 3 million square kilometers. So in other words, about 17% of the world's population lived on 2.4% of the world's land mass. India had one of the oldest family planning programs in the world, which was started in 1952. And in 2005, the crude birth rate was 23 per 1,000, and the fertility was 2.9. This led me to the research question: what are the incentives and the barriers that influence whether a couple will use family planning? And does this differ from the north to the south? My research was conducted in two locations in India, one in the north, Agra, in the state of Uttar Pradesh, and one in the south, in the city of Manipal. This was, these two sites were chosen because of previous existing relationships through the University of Minnesota School of Public Health and the India Partnerships. And these two locations were also chosen because of the geographic region, the difference of the population, and the difference of the urban and the rural, Agra being a rural area and Manipal being more of an urban area. The study design was a qualitative study based on the theory of ground behavior. Face-to-face interviews were taken with the women and the healthcare providers, and a translator was used to translate the local languages, Hindi in the north in Agra and Kannada in the south in Manipal. In total, 25 participants were interviewed, 5 clinicians and 20 patients, and this was a convenient sample. Recruitment was done at the clinics, referred by the doctors and the nurses. Consent, this was approved by the University of Minnesota IRB and local approval. Oral and written consent was taken prior to the filming. The women who are filmed in this video were asked to participate before they had, while they were waiting in the waiting room, and they were given a description of the video and asked then to repeat in their own words how they would interpret the video to be used. So I would tell them, I'm a master's student, I would like to ask you some questions about family planning, I'll have a video, there's a translator as well, I plan on going back to America to create a documentary film to show other people, are you okay with that? And if they said yes, then I'd ask them to again repeat what I just said and how it was going to be used. No financial incentives were also given. The audio was transcribed by production transcripts, and observational data and audio were coded by hand using the qualitative methodology and using Microsoft Excel. Video was captured on a Sony DV or a camcorder, and I edited this film using Final Cut Express. And we can show the film now.
India was the second most populated country in the world, with a population of 1.15 billion people. These 1.15 billion people were living on approximately 3 million square kilometers, or roughly one-third of the United States. In other words, 17% of the world's population was living on only 2.4% of the world's land mass. Because India has one of the world's oldest national family planning policies, one would imagine that family planning programs are well known and well utilized throughout the country. If this is the case, then why does the population continue to increase? This is the research question that took me to two areas of India during the summer of 2008. Over 6 weeks, I traveled across India to Agra in the northern state of Uttar Pradesh, and in the south to the city of Manipal in the state of Karnataka. I traveled to these two different regions because I wanted to understand what are the incentives and what are the barriers that influence whether or not a couple single-use family planning methods. In addition, I wanted to see if there are any differences between the North and the South. I conducted 25 face-to-face interviews with pregnant women, medical doctors, and social workers to identify exactly what are the influences that motivate or discourage a couple to use family planning methods. The themes are presented here. Agra, located in the north region of India, is best known for the majestic Taj Mahal and the Red Fort. This agrarian district has a population of 1.1 million people, with the majority of residents living in rural villages surrounding this metropolitan area. Regarding health services, for those who are able to pay, there are plenty of private hospitals and private doctors to choose from. However, for those living in the villages, the majority of citizens will avail themselves of free health services offered by the government and charity hospitals.
The family planning services are given at three levels: at primary health center, community health center, and district female hospital.
Dr. Kamaskar told me how auxiliary nurse midwives motivate couples to use family planning in the community.
Up to two children or up to three children, they mostly advise to do poverty oral pills on below. Then after the three, they motivate them for the permanent sterilization.
How do auxiliary nurse midwives motivate the patients?
They go home to home, door to door services provided by them.
Are there financial incentives that motivate couples to use family planning methods?
Yes, there are financial incentives which are provided by our state government. 1,000 rupees to the patient and 100 rupees to the provider.
60% of my patients have tried some family planning or the other. But it's more in most of the time, it's more like wishful thinking. When I ask them, do you want an issue? They will say, no, certainly not. It is not so much about initial family planning which a newly married couple undertakes to delay childbirth. So I have to approach this topic very cautiously, because sometimes religious, social, so many issues, and of course cultural diversifications make it the people make it less perceptive for them, less acceptable for them to talk about these things. Of course, getting a woman voluntarily to walk in and ask for family planning and adopt a method is difficult in an Indian context.
What do you know about family planning?
Family planning is a common and more active situation that one child is open to you. It depends on the people to go individually. And if you want that your children is like want some friendly environment, like to it's also.
You asked about the issues which dominate family planning in India. In North India, sadly, the gender of the baby is a big bearing on the family planning methods. If the first baby is a male, then many times the educated class also calls it a day, would like to adopt some method of family planning or the other, and that's it. They consider their family complete. In most the gender bias still exists. If it is a girl, they would definitely like to go for another one. Sometimes, in the home of a boy, I have seen 5 or even 7 girls being given birth, all that the next conception would be a boy. Sadly, sometimes illegal activities are undertaken, as in sex determination and abortion of the female fetus, which is a crime. So that is undertaken in hope of a male child. So, it all depends on the gender. If the gender is right, she has 2 boys, she'll happily go for a ligation.
Actually, in our India, it's not like nuclear family, no. In-laws are also there. But it depends on their business also. In my opinion, one is okay, but if they want, then it depends. Suppose if I have first baby child, a baby girl, maybe second she will be there. Otherwise, it's baby boy.
In the South, the situation is different. population 15,000, is located near Mangalore, a city on the southwestern coast of India along the Arabian Sea. It is best known as a center of academic learning and home to Kasturba Medical College at Manipal University, a well-known medical private college in India. Over the years, Kasturba Medical College, better known as KMC Manipal, and the surrounding communities have formed strong public-private partnerships to improve the health delivery system and increase outreach to the community. Through the Rural Maternal Child Welfare Homes, or RMCW homes, patients are seen in well-kept facilities, have better access to doctors, and can receive medical attention as well as health education. Farming and fishing are common livelihoods in the rural areas surrounding Manipal. Like Agra, free government hospitals exist at all levels, but here, because of KMC Manipal, patients have additional options to receive care in private hospitals for free or reduced costs.
India was the first country to start family planning program in the year 1930. And actually, country like India needs family planning program because we have got vast number of population. And 1/6 of the world's population and seen in India. And here, we have got 7 rural centers within a radius of 30 kilometers. Our doctors from gynae department go there and they conduct deliveries, they conduct postpartum sterilizations, they visit properties, and also they distribute oral contraceptives and condoms also. At the national level, only 48% of those have accepted family planning letters. 48. But here, more than 70% couples, they have adopted family planning letters.
Joining in this interview is Dr. Lina, KMC Manipal.
So have you used any method?
No, we didn't use it.
You didn't use any method?
No. Because after many hours, we didn't know we got pregnant.
After how many years of marriage did you become pregnant?
Two years.
So after 2 years of marriage, she became pregnant. But you haven't used any method?
No, we didn't have.
How many children do you hope to have?
Now this is my first. No, we didn't think about that. First after that,
now, like, you know, after you had your first delivery, like, even, have you thought of having a second child?
Yes, no, we didn't think about that. But we have going to
plan it later. Okay, but according to you, like, what should be the gap between two children? How many years of gap?
I mean, 3 months. 3 years, sorry.
So there should be at least 3 years of gap you say between two children.
And what is your plan to make sure, you know, that you have the adequate gap?
The property is better than tablet. This is a little, it's in health education, it's for 3 years, they will have a total cooperative.
Translating this interview is Dr. Lina.
Well, Geshwar Shaitama.
I'm Asha.
She's married for the last 6 years. You got it?
First to go
to Magunta. She has one child and now she's pregnant.
What is her child's name?
Magu in Hesra, you know?
Abhishruti.
Udugala? Abhishruti. Boy. So, you guys, how many years have been here?
Almost.
Now she's 9 months pregnant.
And how many children does she ideally want to have?
Nimge, eshtu makkalu ottige bekanta
shartiya? Two
children sufficient.
So, after this, will she start using any contraceptives?
Idu ada nantara nive en maduva plan anta.
Conception madbeku anta
hetu. She's planning to undergo sterilization after this pregnancy. Delivery.
Why would women use either temporary or permanent methods?
Most common reasons women want to use the permanent method is traumatic. You have 2 children, finish it. So many times what happens is they don't go in for spending. They have one child, soon after that within 1 or 2 years they conceive. They have a second child and then they plan to go in.
Suppose your mother undergoes sterilization, she gets some cash incentives. Some cash incentives. It's 260 rupees. Because the main idea is when she is in the hospital, you know, the family cannot go for work. Just compensate that one, the government pays some sort of tax incentive for rupees 260 rupees. Apart from that, here hospital bill might come around 10,000 rupees or 5,000 rupees. we say that 100% literacy we have achieved here. All are educated. So that is why we may say that this may be also one of the reasons for achieving your health goals. So if there is education and health education, so definitely people know what they have to follow and what they have to accept. So that is why most of the problem, health problems and mental health has been solved here.
Thank you. I told you, like, no, in this part of India, Karnataka, status of the women is quite high. I told you because of literacy rate and all that. I think the same is quite different from, you know, the states elsewhere. In the north and all, I'm sure you will find a different scenario. That's what you also would have realized after talking to our mothers. They are very hesitant to talk to you about family planning methods and how many children they wish to have, isn't it? So I feel the scene is a little different compared to India, especially the north and all that. I think the scene is just opposite. Men and women, they will not have a say to, you know, make a decision, and then they would want to have more children and preference to females, I mean to males. All this could be the way with you. Status of the woman is, of course, definitely, you know, because ultimately she is the person who could make a decision. And she doesn't have the cooperation of the husband and family, then it's going to be very, very difficult.
Through my discussions with the women and clinicians, as well as my own daily observations, I identified 5 factors or themes which influence one's acceptance to family planning methods. The first is gender of the baby. The dowry system and the preference for the male child continues throughout India. This inequality is often perpetuated by the second theme, the decision maker. Sometimes the couple is not the family planning decision maker. Instead, the most powerful person in the household decides, the mother-in-law. The pressure from the mother-in-law, as well as the lack of financial incentives for temporary family planning methods, affect the third theme, type of family planning method used. The fourth theme, maternal literacy, also influences a society value of a girl, the biases of the mother-in-law, and the knowledge of family planning methods. Finally, the role of the healthcare provider and distance to health services is essential in whether or not education and counseling is provided to the couple.
So what I'll do next is just kind of review some of the themes and some of the limitations that I found for this during the study. First, as mentioned, there are 5 themes, as you can see here, and I'll just go through and give some evidence for each theme. The first theme, gender of the baby. As mentioned, preference of the male baby still exists throughout India, both in the north and the south, as seen here by the doctor Chaturvedi in Agra. Sometimes in the hope of a boy, I've seen 5 or 7 girls being given birth, all that with the next conception would be a boy. The family decision maker. In the joint family, where usually the new couple will live with the mother-in-law and the husband's family, the mother-in-law is the decision maker, as seen, as described by the woman in Agra. In-laws are there also. The number of children depend on their decision. Where in the South, nuclear families, where it's just the immediate mother and father and then the children, the husband and the wife are usually the decision maker. People are going in for nuclear families. That's why only the husband, wife, and children who stay together. They are both the decision makers. The third theme, family planning method used. As told, government gives financial incentives for permanent sterilization. Temporary methods are not used because it depends on the sex of the baby. One of the quotes, the most common reason why women want to use permanent methods, it's done. you have two children and you finish it. I was also very surprised at the theme of the permanent sterilization instead of temporary methods that came through during these interviews as well. The fourth theme, maternal literacy. Maternal literacy is associated with positive outcomes and increased value of the girl child. There's a lack of education. As a woman's education rises, there is an acceptance in family planning. And finally, the last theme, healthcare access and provider. In the North, the family planning education is given at community levels by the auxiliary nurse midwives. And also with the government and charity hospitals, oftentimes family planning services are associated with long waiting, fewer doctors, and poorer facilities. I remember I had a journal, and I also kept a blog when I was doing this film. And in the OB-GYN outpatient department, I shadowed a doctor. And during this time, she saw 22 patients during 45 minutes, and that's approximately 2 minutes spent with each patient. Where in the South, because Casturban Medical College, which is a private institution, had a partnership with the district government, and this complements the existing structure, and they're able to reach out to a larger community and expand the outpatient services and also give health education. This was also a theme that I used about how the different themes either encourage or discourage family planning by the theme and location. As you can see, the gender of the baby oftentimes discourages family planning. The mother-in-law, again, was a family decision maker. The type of family method used, financial incentives for the permanent sterilization was encouraging for family planning. In the North, they had low knowledge about child spacing, where in the South, they accepted small families and had knowledge about child spacing through the health education. In the fourth theme, maternal literacy, in the North it was low, in the South it was high. And then the fifth theme, healthcare provider and access, in the North they had only government or charity services, and then in the South they had a public-private partnership. So some takeaway points, some of the barriers to family planning that I found were the male gender preference in the mother-in-law as a family planning decision maker, and also low maternal literacy. And some of this incentives were the financial incentives given and public-private partnerships. This film was also translated into an executive summary, as well as a scientific poster and a student blog, and also a manuscript. Again, when I was going and finishing my master's in public health, I was also looking at different ways and different, avenues that we can translate some of the research that we do to different audiences. Some of the limitations of the study, the time spent in the study, you know, this was done in a total of 6 weeks, 3 weeks in the North, 3 weeks in the South. Family planning is also a very sensitive topic for the couples, so there's a bias to women who are more open to talking about family planning. I had no knowledge of the local language, Hindi in Canada, so I also relied on some of the nurses and also the doctors to not only recruit but also help translate. Because I was a student, I had limited sources for additional coders, and this is not generalizable outside of the population. As far as future implications, I think that social media is a quick way to share information to a large, broader audience about specific topics. For example, I've shown this to different audiences in Minnesota and in Washington, D.C. I'm currently living in Tanzania, and so you're able to kind of have different conversations with different groups of people. I also think that you can use multimedia and technology in different ways, whether it be this documentary film, a blog, you know, different ways just to communicate and share this information. And finally, you're able to disseminate information across disciplines. In addition, this study can also inform other research or evaluations on family planning in India. For example, you know, you can look at the involvement of the mother-in-law and the influences of the mother-in-law. Many people have asked me, what about the male and the husband? How come, you know, how can we start involving them in future studies? You know, you can look at temporary methods versus permanent methods. So this is just a way to kind of start conversations, and also any type of qualitative research, I think, can also then inform any quantitative research later on. Research has been, these results have been shared with the stakeholders in India, and I also believe that this is a complement to the research component of public health. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Aimee. I'm sure you all have a lot of questions for her, and I don't want to hog the mic. So we'll start with questions from the audience. Yes, please.
Who did you intend would be the main audience for when you made the film?
Yes, please.
Who did you intend would be the main audience?
My main audience was community members, other public health professionals. But, you know, if I were to do this in a... do different types of research, you can also use this as an advocacy or policy tool. You know, if there was a specific policy question or a research question that could influence certain type of action to be taken later on, I also think that this is a very powerful way to kind of explore that. But because of the limitations and the requirements of my master's degree, I needed to kind of focus that. So my audience were community members and other public health professionals.
Stakeholders in India would also be informed of the results. So what do you mean by stakeholders?
Please repeat the question.
Her question was asking about the stakeholders that were involved and how I was going to disseminate the information back to them. The stakeholders who were involved were the partners that the School of Public Health were involved with, so the hospitals in the north, all of the women who I interviewed, the doctors, I would provide copies of this film to them, and any of the medical, the providers who were interviewed, and also both in the north and the south. So anyone who I had collaborated with, anyone who I had interviewed and received consent, I made sure to kind of circle back and make sure that they were able to see the final product. And at least, I mean, I think it's always hard to get mailing addresses for people, but I, so if I wasn't able to, I also shared a link. I was able to upload this online and email it to them. So yeah, those are the ways that I tried to disseminate it back to the communities. Thank you. That was something, because it was a convenient sample, that was very difficult for me to control for. But looking back and also looking at the literature, I do agree that socioeconomic status and class does very much play a role in a lot of these health outcomes and also attitudes towards certain health services. So yes, thank you. It's very difficult. Right now, I'm actually a fellow with the CDC and the Associations for Schools of Public Health in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. So most of my work is in surveillance, monitoring, and evaluation, and we're at a very national perspective. But it, you know, I think that you are able to interact with different communities, but it is very difficult to kind of carve out time and make it a priority, because not only is it building relationships with the community and forming your research questions, but it is also spending time reviewing and editing your film. So it is something that I hope to go back to, because I do believe that this is a great avenue. But as a recent graduate, I think that I also need to kind of get my footing, and also I wanted to explore other, I guess, other methodological things to kind of broaden my portfolio as well. Yeah. I think it, the IUDs, and I think the different types of methods that are available will really depend on what is accessible at that location. I think it also depends on donations. I think it also depends on what trainers are trained on. And so I think, you know, I think IUDs have been, in my experience, have been a very popular and accepted form of contraceptives. There's also condoms and the pills, but oftentimes women find it very challenging to get to a clinic, you know, every month or every 3 months. And so I think as far as convenience, IUDs, from my experience, they seem to be the most popular type of contraceptive.
I also found it very interesting that you chose such a visual format for presenting your research, because it's a very comprehensive qualitative study. So my question is, you spoke a little bit about reaching different audiences and using the social media to get other people involved, and you also mentioned the stakeholders in India that you're hoping to distribute the film to. How do you hope they will use your film in their work, in their line of work, to promote what they're promoting?
I think as far as how the stakeholders will use this information, I hope that they are able to see some of the successes that their program has. As far as the women that I interviewed in the North, I think that they were very aware of some of the challenges that they face against. I hope that they are able to use some of the techniques, or maybe, motivate women to accept different types of family planning. And I say that cautiously, though, because I know that it's just not a wand that you're able to kind of wave, and you're able to create a cadre and change attitudes. But I hope that they'll be able to see kind of the work that they're doing and the importance of the work that they're doing, and hope that this continues to motivate them as well.
So here's my question to you. Thank you very much, Aimee. That was a very, very interesting discussion. Here's my question to you, and I'm not going to call on you to answer it right away, but maybe just think of it as a thought to take away with you, or if you like, just sort of raise your hand and say, I want to weigh in on that. But when we were watching the first film, Real Collaboration, and What It Takes for Global Health to Succeed, I was particularly struck by what James Austin said about fear of losing control over your work being a block to actual collaboration. And in my line of work, I've seen that, and I've been producing media, I've worked for the print, I've worked with nonprofits for years, and I've seen this across the board pretty much everywhere. So I'm curious to know if you guys have experienced something similar, and if you have any strategies that you would like to share for overcoming this fear and for building trust. I mean, I almost shudder at using the cliche trust deficit, but I wonder if you've seen that trust deficit in your line of work when you're trying to collaborate with people, and how you've managed to overcome that in your work. So if anyone would like to talk about that, that would be awesome. I think we can have a really great discussion on this. Or not. Well, thank you. Yes.
And really was listened to me, that we are now almost at the end of the year and the group is still together. And I don't know if we trust each other entirely and totally, but at least we've supported each other in doing very concrete things that have had a trust building.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Anybody else want to share their strategies? Yes? Any other questions? Well, you're all welcome to hang out here for as long as you like. We're going to have another film screening at 6:30, and we would love to have you join us for that. We have another presenter. And thank you very much for joining us today for this session. Stay with us. Thank you.